You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
That's the attitude.
All right.
Hello. Welcome to Fat Gatsby.
Let's get this over with.
Triple Radio for July 13th of 2015.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. It's Tim, it's Weiss, it's Dave.
Yeah.
Feels like forever.
It's been a bit longer than normal since we recorded.
That's why I wasn't sure on the size of this one. I'm just like, I've had time to actually play games. That means that you must have played games.
Yeah. Must have.
But yeah, it's been since the beginning of June. It was like the week before E3. Mm-hmm. So then that happened, and the rest of June, and
A Steam sale later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
What'd you guys get on Steam sale?
I got to remember now.
A shit ton of stuff that I have not touched at all.
I actually went through, well, at least some of mine. The only non-Steam, I'm going to count it as Steam sale because it was the same week, but I got Toonstruck on GOG for $5.
Yeah, that
which
counts.
I can talk about now or later. And I first got Crypt of the Necrodancer and sort of changed my mind after playing it and was thinking about Grim Fandango a lot, which was the exact same price on the sale. So I actually did the Steam refund thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it was under $2, or 2 hours. It probably was under $2, too.
It was like 20 minutes. You played like a run by the looks of it.
Yeah. Okay. No, I went through, well, I feel like I went through like three times, at least three different dungeons.
Okay, three times.
But either or. Yeah. It wasn't a lot, but either or, they were both $7.50, and I figured I was wanting to play Grim more now.
You and suddenly found yourself wishing you had Grim Fandango.
Yeah. And Crypt of the Necrodancer will be on a bigger sale down the road. Like, it's made for it. So, I'll probably pick it up again down the road. Tales from the Borderlands was the other big one. I got the season of that.
And what the fuck? Yeah, it ended up being a good Steam sale for me after...
Yeah, my God.
A few where I didn't really get much. Like, because, you know, you first get your computer and you get on Steam, those first few are like, oh my God, holy shit, all this stuff. And then after a while, you kind of end up getting all the stuff you want between the past Steam sales and Humble Bundles and just the never-ending slew. Like, right now, Green Man Gaming is doing their summer shit, and it's just like, there's just constantly sales on PC games. And at a certain point, it's just like, do I need to get this? Can I just wait till the next sale? Obviously, there's hundreds of games sitting in my Steam library that I haven't touched. But, I got Crypt of the Necrodancer and Grow Home. It's another big game from this year. I haven't touched it yet.
Yeah.
It's in the queue.
That was a tempting one.
Yeah.
I got that Legend of Korra game.
Yeah.
For $350.
Yeah.
I've got opinions.
I got that. I got, let's see, what else? The Talos Principle. That was a late last year, 2014 release. It's supposed to be very good.
I saw there was some DLC coming for that or something. Oh, so.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Yeah, again, in the queue. Like, everything is kind of on, you know, fucking Witcher 3.
People describe that game as a puzzle game, right?
Yeah.
Sort of a puzzle adventure.
Yeah, I heard people compare it to, Portal. I mean, it's not fucking Portal, but it's a single player kind of puzzle. It has some interesting mechanics, apparently, but it's supposed to be very good. I got the first episode of Life is Strange.
Oh,
okay.
Because that was $250, and I wanted to see what all the fuss was about. There wasn't a huge discount on the season pass,
right? Because otherwise, I would have.
Yeah, so I was just like, okay, I'll at least get that and check it out. But fucking Killer is Dead. For some very small amount. Got Goat Simulator with like the last $3 I had to spend.
Goat Simulator as well. That's what else I got. I got Goat Simulator and I got Hateful Boyfriend. Which I haven't gotten to that one. I got to play a little Goat Simulator.
Yeah, and I got picked up Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin, which is the re-release From earlier this, I guess, yeah. The HD remaster, the director's cut version.
Sure.
Whatever. I mean, I didn't have it on PC. I didn't have any of the DLC, and this version has better graphics, different enemy placements, so a litany of reasons that it's worth owning.
Yeah.
But, like, all that stuff was under $60 altogether.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah, I spent $35 including Toonstruck on GOG, so
yeah,
it's pretty good.
I'm looking at my recently installed list, like installed in the past month, and I can't tell. There were a couple great Humble Bundles.
Yes, there was the woman one.
Yep.
So of the 40 games I've recently installed, wow, it's hard for me to remember which came from Steam and which didn't. But I know that I think Valiant Hearts, Sir, You Are Being Hunted, Octodad, Nidhogg, Witcher 2. What else did I get? Oh my god. Okay, again, now at this point I can't tell. I got Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Death 8 because they were 20 cents a piece.
Yeah, those are cool games. Yeah. Well, yeah, I haven't played those, but I will stand by Breath of Death for most of that game. Yeah.
Got Grim Fandango, got Cook Serve Delicious, which was a favorite of the late
Ryan did get
Davis.
That. I never wrote it down, yeah.
Picked up the first Five Nights at Freddy's for I think it was less than a buck.
Oh really?
That. And Stanley Parable and Hatoful Boyfriend as well.
I saw the guys who made Breath of Death and Cthulhu Saves the World. Their new game is like a Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. That looks
inspired
great.
Piece of 16-bit RPG styled RPG, which looks fucking
great. I thought it was
more
Fantasy Star.
It's both.
Those are the two main influences.
Okay. Yeah.
Visually, it looks a lot like Fantasy.
Yeah, but it has like a Chrono Trigger-ish battle system.
I can't remember her real name, but Catbot from US Gamer. That was like
Bailey.
Yeah, Cat Bailey. That was like her pick out of fucking E3. Mm. So that got attention on US Gamer.
Those are the guys that did the last two Penny Arcade RPGs as well. Zeboid Games.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
This will be the first one of their games I'll play.
I've had Breath of Death on Xbox Live, like indie games channel for a long time, but I never grabbed Cthulhu Saves the World. And again, they were 20 cents each. So I was like, well, fuck, maybe I'll play them on here.
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun. Well, again, the one that I played is fun. But yeah, usually my rule is to only keep 50 Steam games installed any one time.
That's probably good.
It kind of keeps things focused because if I just installed like 100 games, it would be like, But that's usually how I filter things by default. It's like, okay, well, what do I have installed to play
right
now?
I have 28 games installed right now.
Okay. Yeah.
Of 217.
I have a shit ton because I just don't uninstall the ones that I want to pick at.
I try to keep it caught up and clean when I can. And sometimes when I don't like something, the satisfaction of kicking that shit off my hard drive, just like, fuck this. I will never play you again.
Oh, if I'm not going to play it, I have a million folders for such things.
Yeah, I have
folders.
Love
folders. Really you got to do folders. Like, when I saw Weiss's collection and all the folders, I was like, why have I not been doing this for years? But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have played quite a bit of Crypt of the NecroDancer, 7 hours up from 6 an hour ago. But that's what I did for the last.
I saw
hour.
You hop on, yeah.
Yeah, I really like Crypt of the NecroDancer. That game is fucking hard. It is rough sometimes because you have to. So the way the game works is you just control with the arrow keys. On this grid dungeon, and you use that to move around. You have to move in time to the beat of the dungeon because the NecroDancer stole your heart and is using it to power the beats of his dungeon, is how it goes.
So far, so good.
And that's also why you can't die because, well, you don't die permanently.
So you want your heart back. Why?
You're trying to get your heart back.
You can't
die. There's some other story bits with involving your character's father. Yeah. No, not your true love, your dad.
Yeah, well, still love.
Okay.
don't try to tell me.
You also push in the direction of an enemy in order to attack, which is weird sometimes, depending on your weapon, such as whips, which can hit in kind of the pattern of a like a knight from chess, in that they go out one space and then up two. Which is really awkward because you're not always looking at that enemy, and you're just trying to move out of the way of something, and then you attack it, and that's bad.
Yeah.
And the broadsword hits in kind of the swath in front of you. And I have trouble with those. I prefer things that hit long and straight in front of you. So I'm like, okay, that's what I'm facing. That's what I'm attacking. But it's tough because it's not like you can stop and think. You know, in a game like Shiren the Wanderer, which is not terribly dissimilar from this, when you take a turn, all of the enemies take a turn as well. But when you're standing there, nothing is going on. But in this, the enemies continue to close in. Mm-hmm. So you really got to think on your feet and keep hopping around and keep moving. And it's, you know, sometimes you just get overwhelmed and you fucking die. But it's really fun and the music is really good.
I will agree the music is very good.
Like, was it half price?
It was half price.
Yeah. No, I just could not gel with the moving. I was incredibly bored, and I didn't see how I was going to be improving. And I guess, like, that's kind of one of those things with dungeon crawlers where, like, if I don't see how I'm making progress, like, I have no draw to go back into that dungeon. Like, same thing happened with Shiren eventually.
Right, yeah.
But...
yeah, I mean, in this, like, you unlock more weapons that will drop, and you can unlock upgrades for your character to make things easier. By the time I have gotten to the fourth level of the dungeon, it's like I pretty much have everything unlocked that I could possibly want.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, there's a store where you can buy weapons before you go in.
Yeah.
For a run.
Oh, I got that already.
Oh, well, that was, like, the last thing I unlocked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe those characters are randomized.
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think you're just kind of, as you go through level by level, you're just kind of building up your skills to do the all levels run and do it all in one go, which I imagine is hard. It's a tough game.
Female protagonist?
Yeah.
All right, sold.
Well, unless you can change your avatar. Game has Steam Workshop support. Well, I mean, it has other characters built in, but I did fiddle around with that stuff a little bit. Like, I downloaded because I had seen that there was a Mega Man Total Conversion for the game, which is awful because you don't know what anything is. It's like this being able to play this game relies very heavily on you immediately recognize what an enemy is, what an item is, and what to do. So when that is not immediately recognizable, even having at that point I had only played the game for an hour, but I was just like totally lost playing. I was just like, fucking no. I did play around with custom soundtracks a little bit, and that's pretty neat. Dropped in some Shovel Knight music and changed my avatar to Shovel Knight, so that was pretty fun. Yeah, but you really need like something with a decent tempo to it, or else you are hopping very slowly around that dungeon and it's just not interesting. Whew. That's cool. I like it.
I don't listen to the music.
You would not return it.
I didn't return it. No, I've played it for more than 2 hours. It is more than 2 weeks. It is out of the return zone. It's coming to PS4 and Vita.
Yeah.
To Patrick no Clevick one's surprise.
Yeah.
I think that's everything I bought in the Steam sale that I played.
Yeah, I double checked mine. Yeah. It is. I was gifted Lisa, and that was
I haven't played that yet.
I played a little, but not really enough to discuss.
Yeah, most of my time gaming has been playing The Witcher 3, which I'm sure I'm over. The hour counter in that game is not accurate, I don't think.
It seems low or high?
It's too high. After I'd been playing it for like 2 or 3 weeks, I think I had my hour count at something like 60, 70 hours. And I'm like, that's not correct. That is off. And I've looked online and other people have been like, yeah, that's totally not right. Some people thought it was counting like the in-game days and stuff, but that's not right either. I think it's fair to say I'm in the 60 to 100 hour range on that game at this point. Wow. It's tough to say. I didn't get it on Steam, so I don't have that handy hour counter, and I had trouble.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
I had trouble patching it, putting the day one patch on it with GOG Galaxy, so I uninstalled GOG and just installed it DRM-free, on my computer.
I was wondering if you had used GOG Galaxy much.
I have now, because that's how I played Toonstruck.
No.
Okay.
But yeah, I basically downloaded it to preload Witcher 3, and then I couldn't
patch
Witcher 3 to play Witcher 3, so it was a bad first experience about as bad as it could be.
The dozen or so games I've purchased from Good Old Games are, you know, I look at my little shelves in a web browser still and look at
right.
and the ones I have downloaded and installed, I've just made Steam shortcuts to them. So.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
See, that's the thing, is like having them actually in a client has me much more wanting to play these games. Because I've had a ton of games.
Yeah, me too.
And just like, I have no desire to play Fallout 1 and 2 right now.
Yeah.
But they're there. So.
They're good old games, man.
Yeah. Man. Well, I tried System Shock. That was the only one I tried without a client.
Yeah. I do appreciate that it's there. It will ultimately help organize that library better.
Yeah.
It was just for that purpose, it failed.
Right.
The Witcher 3 continues to be a very good game for basically everything that I said last time. The fact that I can't really sit down and play it for, you know, an afternoon or a day, like one might be able to do before they have a child in their lives, is probably actually to my advantage, as I'll get to fire it up for maybe a couple hours at the tail end of my day, after baby and Lauren have gone to sleep, or yeah, so the baby has to be asleep basically, more or less. So it's like, you know, I just kind of come in and decide what my adventure for that evening is going to be, or where I'm going to explore, and then off I go.
Forces you to compartmentalize each session into a more discrete kind of goal.
Yeah, well, and I don't get fatigued from or overwhelmed, because that game is fucking huge. It is enormous. I don't know how I mentioned it. It's like, you know, I got out of the initial starter area, and then they drop you into a zone that is just many times the size of that first zone. And I just spent dozens of hours there getting sidetracked doing quests and eventually doing the main quests. You get up into this city, which is large and very intricate and complicated and whatnot. And there's like a ton of quests there. And then it's like, after doing all that and like doing, you know, a ton of stuff in this area, then I go on to another huge area, the Skellig Islands, which is, you know, it's basically Skyrim.
You know, Skellig Island.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, the people are Vikings and there's Jarls around, and it's all mountainy and cold and Vikingy and shit.
I had my first experimental gay experience on the Skellig Islands. Yeah, of course I know the Skellig Islands.
Of course.
Of course. Once you go there.
Yeah, I ended up ended up jacking up the difficulty at a certain point, because I was so overleveled and just mowing through everything. Apparently I heard after the fact that a lot of reviewers were saying you should just start the game at a more difficult difficulty, because you will just outlevel everything so fast, which I somewhat agree with. It's probably best to play the game starting on normal just to get a handle of things, and then maybe eventually if you start to feel it get too easy, then bump it up, which is what I did, and it's been good since then. I still die, but I don't feel like the game is frustrating at this point, but it forces me to make use of my toolbox a lot more, which is good. Instead of just stabbing everything to death, I got to use my oils and bombs and magic and whatnot. That's a very good, very big game, and it's insane how much good stuff is not required content in that game. It's like they, I feel it's like,
it is not required like for like story completion.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there is a buttload of side stuff in this game, but just the quality of it, like the stuff that they made, but is missable is nuts. It's just like,
when you think about the amount of time they spent crafting something, putting the care into something that many players just might not see at all.
Yeah. I mean, I feel it's probably good, because for someone who wants a more straightforward experience through the game, they will be able to get that. Mm-hmm. Like in certain Grand Theft Auto games, I might have wanted a bit more of a direct experience, but they have a lot of missions with, you know, characters that you spend hanging out with them that might not have a ton of consequence in general. So they don't make that stuff. They could have made it more required in this game, but they didn't. But it's fine, because I just like doing it. It reminds me of playing like Knights of the Old Republic for the first time, where I just wanted to do every last thing, or just any BioWare RPG, where it's like, of course I'm going to do this quest. Why wouldn't I? Why would I want to waste this opportunity? And there's very little that is not worth seeing, and usually that stuff is over so fast that it's like, whatever. I'm just doing it on my way anyway, so who cares? But then again, sometimes I do something off the beaten path, and I find some kind of incredible schematic or weapon or something, and I'm just like, well, shit. It's a good thing I wandered over here.
Go. Oh.
Witcher.
Yeah, I think I'm getting towards the end of it. I bet you by the next podcast, I'll probably have seen credits roll, maybe. I saw that they're talking about their expansions that they're doing, and each one of them apparently is going to be at least as big as The Witcher 2, that entire game.
That's nuts.
I'm just like, oh, fucking Christ.
Big as in 2015.
I guess.
World.
I mean, but if you make it good.
Sure. It's not a detriment. Yeah. It's just like, it's what.
Yeah,
it's what gaming is right now.
Yeah,
when we
but
look
it's
just—it's
so rare that I see big and that it actually pays off with being quality.
Yeah,
as well. Like Dragon Age Inquisition was very big,
right?
It was huge. It had very few things that were of a high quality in it.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah. that eShop bundle. Remember
that?
Yeah, I think we talked about it. We were in the middle of it.
I needed on that.
I ended up picking that up once they added a few more games to it, which included Gunman Clive.
Yeah, that's a cool game.
Which is something that I've been eyeballing. Yeah, I played Gunman Clive. That game is a cool game. I think normally that game is something like $2 or $3 anyway, which is just it's a side-scrolling. Just shooter. Action platformer sort of deal.
It was funny that I'd heard it compared to Mega Man, and I wouldn't think that. I think from just playing it, but having someone said that, and so I was looking for a little Mega Man coming out. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see how this
the way you climb
like
the ladders.
Stripped out. Yeah, the way you climb the ladders, especially. But I mean, you know, purely not from a structural standpoint, but purely from kind of the way the running and jumping feels and the climbing of the ladders.
I mean, yeah, it's just like an NES game where it's just simple, straightforward, go left to right, shoot things. Jump, duck, etc. Reminded me of playing through what the hell was that game? Mighty Gunvolt.
Oh,
that little 8-bit simple action platformer deal from last year. And it's fun. I mean, you're not gonna spend a lot of time on it necessarily, unless you sit there and play through it a bunch of times. I mean, it wasn't long; it was like an hour and a half, but it was cool.
Yeah,
yeah. I did play Ali Ali on my 3DS, and remembered why I don't really like that game.
Oh, it's so hard to get those controls
right. Can't really get into it.
I've tried a few times on PC.
I've been playing Pushmo on my 3DS, which I got. Why'd you say it like that?
What?
Everyone loves that game.
Because I also have Pushmo. I bought it a while ago. Tried it out for a little bit and just wasn't really feeling it.
No, yeah, I'm feeling it. I played a shitload of it. I think this might be scary. It reminds me of the puzzling in Catherine. It's not nearly as fucking hard, but just the way you're like pulling things out and climbing up a thing. Yeah, it's pretty fun. The only thing I got that free. It was one of my last Club Nintendo doodads. But just fucking Nintendo's incessant, unskippable tutorials. It's like just concepts that I immediately understand. And this old man explaining it over and over again. It's like, oh, wow, you picked that up quick. You're a natural. God, shut up. Shut the fuck up.
Please let me start playing.
Just let me get through this level. And then there's like a nice, after the initial tutorial, there's a nice like block of a bunch of levels where he doesn't talk to you. Then there's another point where they start introducing new mechanics that are very easy to understand. And each one gets explained multiple times over. It's like there's like manholes or ladders or something that you can use to pop to different parts of the Pushmo. And also I'm tickled that in this world amusement parks are just these large pull-out things that kids play on. I would totally go to an amusement park like that. It seems like a lot of fun. But you know, I understand. Okay, I go in the hole here and I pop out there, and like this dude explains to me in great detail. It's like, oh yeah, you gotta go through. And then there's a level with two. So obviously I'm completely overwhelmed. There's two of these. There's two sets, and they're two different colors. You know, how does this work?
Now that you talk about this, I think that might have been why I gave up on it, because I only played it for maybe 20 minutes, half an hour. I was like, I don't fucking have time for this right now.
Yeah, you gotta get through that to actually start doing the push mowing, which sucks, because God, it's so unbearable. Anything else? Oh, I played You Must Build a Boat, which is the sequel to 10 Million, that puzzle.
Oh yeah,
I don't know.
It was a match 3 puzzle game that was on iPad, okay. And it is on Steam
as
well.
It's an iOS game.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, it was on Steam, and it's on Android, and it's on everything at this point. Well,
gotcha.
I think. Yeah, it's basically that with some tweaks. It was fun. It was $3. If you haven't played 10 million, maybe play 10 million first, and then maybe a couple years you'll want to play You Must Build a Boat, because they're very similar. But it was good. And I'm pretty sure that's what I played.
Oh, okay.
Just a lot of The Witcher, man. I can't really.
Yeah, given how long it's been between podcasts and you're still playing Witcher 3, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't. I feel like I would have gotten burnt out on it a bit if I didn't have a child.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're playing kind of side quest to side quest, which mm-hmm. is fun. I guess, like, I'm trying to think if I sort of played Shadow of Mordor a little like that, where it's like I could just pop the game on, go do one or two things, and then leave. And it's very satisfying in that little chunk.
Yeah, it's like, oh, tonight I'm going to go do some monster contracts and clean those up a bit. And those are always a hoot. Or tonight I'm going to go and I'm going to do some treasure hunting. Or tonight I'm just going to go, I'm going to do story stuff tonight. Or just incessantly collect Gwent cards. Even though I'm totally cannot collect the full set at this point. And not that this version has achievements anyways, but I just got
fixed. I used to have a full set of Gwent cards when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My mom sold them.
Oh,
see, I had garbage Gwent kids.
But yeah, that game got into me a little bit, not nearly as hard as a triple triad. Or tonight, you know, I'm just going to go look what's over here.
Right.
Let's just go see what's here. Oh, God, there's this really good mission once I got to Skellige where, like, you're going to find this Jarl's son who went to try to kill a giant that, like, forced everyone off this island. So there's this big island, but there's nobody there. But you can hear this giant kind of crashing around off in the distance here and there. It was really fun. It was a really cool
drunk.
Mission. Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. Drunk giant, not you.
Yeah. Yeah, which three is sure a big game. Are. It'll take up a lot of your time. If you let it.
And
if
damn.
You want it to.
If I want it to. Should I go through my pile?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Fire away.
All right, I'll start with Tales from the Borderlands.
Yes, tell me about the Borderlands.
I played the first two. I didn't play the third one, which came out right after E3.
Okay. Those started coming out in December, correct, I think, last year?
The first one was like December, because I put them down because I try and categorize my games into what came out this year and what didn't.
Yep, just I have that.
Yeah. And most of this game is coming out this year. It might as well
this year, so I don't
fucking care. But, yeah, the first one was last year, technically.
Wonder if they do that on purpose. Like, oh, we got to get our first episode out to get Game of the Year award consideration.
Probably. I mean, movies do for Oscars.
Yep. So. American Sniper, the number one grossing movie of 2014. Shakes his head.
At least games don't have the politics of movies yet. It's getting there. Well, because the awards don't mean shit.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, Tales from the Borderlands. It took a little for me to get into it per se, but once it got rolling, like, that's one of the best Telltale series, I think, right now. Like, it's up. Like, the best ones right now are the first season, Walking Dead, and Wolf Among Us, I think. Which the only other one to really contrast is, like, second season Walking Dead, which is good, but not as good as the first. And
it's cool to hear you say that, because I feel like I just don't hear people talking about Tales from the Borderlands very much, or but yeah. maybe it's just not on my personal radar.
No, there's only three episodes, so it's, I guess... Yeah.
I saw people going back and forth, and I think, like, most of the negativity comes from people that wanted it to be Borderlands and didn't quite have an understanding of Telltale. But I will say, like, I think this is Telltale's best combat system, and this could be because this is the first one I'm playing on PC. So I'm not quite sure if, like, it's a little speedier and a little better just because of that versus any lag from the 360 or the PS3. But it's very nice. It's very nice and quick. The writing is that great balance of emotional and funny. It's a different kind of funny than the Borderlands, which is a very distinct voice. But like it has a lot of like Venture Brothers tickness to the enemies of just like letting them talk a little longer than they should, about giving like the grunts personalities, and just kind of like poking fun at like the edges of the world, which is really neat, because
that's cool.
The whole like this series is split between two characters kind of doing a Rashomon thing where it's like, you know, two sides of one story. Like the game starts out in the present where both are like tied up and telling the story. So most of the game is in the past where they're describing what has happened from both their points of view as you bounce between these two. Also really good voice cast with guys like Chris Hardwick and Patrick Warburton. And
oh, wow.
I saw their Minecraft series has like a ridiculously good voice cast.
It's Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, it stars Patton Oswalt. There was like a lot of like they were rattling it off in the Giant Bombcast, and I was like, wow, shit. Like I'm kind of interested in that, despite
the story trailer was pretty good. I like the E3 trailer. Like I have no care of Minecraft whatsoever, but
and it's also that like Telltale is arguably getting super oversaturated right now. Like after the initial Walking Dead took off, they're you know, they ballooned out to multiple teams. They got Wolf Among Us going, another season of Walking Dead, Tales of the Borderlands, Game of Thrones, Minecraft. And
see, that's
like,
the thing. It's like
there's
the
like
one...
two other series in production I can't even think of right now.
Like, I'm not touching Game of Thrones because I haven't heard anything great from that, unfortunately. Like, this one... Yeah. I have an affection for the series anyways, but... Oops. No, I think it's been very solid, and like the emotional stuff they've done has actually been pretty Telltale quality stuff. So I'm pretty hooked on that, and the music's awesome. Like the same guy that's been doing the Telltale music, that really stood out in Wolf Among Us. It wasn't really catchy in Walking Dead per se.
Not toe tapping.
No, it has a very very cool, distinct synth feel in Wolf Among Us. So, but yeah, no, I'm looking forward to playing more. Kind of hoarding that third one for now. Briefly, I'll go into. I mentioned I bought this thing called the Magpie Collection, which was a bunch of little indie games that they ran a fundraiser after a bunch of British indie developers went to this convention and got all their shit stolen, like their laptop.
Oh, yeah.
Namely, the guy that did the Stanley Parable and McPixel were the two named fellows. Mm. And, you know, for the most part, they're like tiny little experimental games, and it was more about giving them money for their laptops than the actual games. But the one from the Mr. Stanley Parable, Mr. William Gugh, G-U-G-H, you pronounce it. A game called... I only want to talk about it because, like, nobody's going to see this game because it only came in this collection. It's Dr. Langoskow, the Tiger, and the Terribly Cursed Emerald by Stanley Parable guy, William Gough. Now, of course, having played Stanley Parable, this is very similar in that the game has kind of nothing to do with those things I listed. It's a game about the behind the scenes of making that game as that game. So, like, you're kind of like sort of a roadie or a techie where you're trying to pull out, like, you're trying to set up the tiger. You're trying to, like, open the cage and make sure it doesn't go like wild over here and over there. And it, it has that sense of humor, and it's, it has a very beginning of Portal feel where you know that you're going to break this system and you're going to be like trying to kind of escape this world, but you don't know how.
Okay.
So that's pretty neat. Like, I need to play a little more of it. My only problem is the first-person-ness, which, without time to refine and be nice to people that get motion sick, it's very kind of jumpy around. But the writing is really funny with his narration. And there was one other game that stood out to me that was just kind of a mimicry kind of game, but it was drawn really well. So you've got your... The setup is that you're a human in a giant magpie costume, and there's all these magpies walking around squawking, but you're a spy and you have to try and fit in. So basically you have three or four buttons of different things. So you've got movement, squawking, and whatever, and you have to do what they're doing. And it's also like if they're forming a circle, you have to get in that circle, or if they're forming this shape, you have to do this and do that. So it was... And, you know, they'll out you and you'll start crying otherwise. So it's, that was pretty entertaining. But it was, cool. It was nice to see a whole bunch of weird little games, even if I didn't give a shit about most of them, to play again. Kind of to see the process thereof. Let's see. Yeah, I didn't play enough of Lisa or Cora. Okay. Toonstruck. If you haven't heard of Toonstruck... This is a point-and-click adventure, not from LucasArts. This is from Virgin in 96. And what they did is hot on the tails... well, I don't know about hot on the tails of Roger Rabbit. A few years after Roger Rabbit, around the time of Cool World, you know, the mixing humans with animation mini trend... was out, and I really like this trend, so I am point and click, so this was an easy sell. But what they do is they take...
You've been doing a lot of pointing and clicking this month.
Yeah, I kind of transitioned from that to that. But, so it stars Christopher Lloyd, and I mean, like, motion captured Christopher Lloyd through the entire game as a animator sucked into an animated world. The thing about this game is the animations are beautiful, and the voice cast is every important voice actor from the mid-90s. Like, it's half the cast of The Simpsons. It's, let's see. It's, you know, Tim Curry. It's,
David Ogden Steers, Ben Stein, Tress McNeil, Jeff Bennett, Dom DeLuise.
Jim DeLuise, that's what I was trying to think.
Dom DeLuise.
Rob Paulson.
Yeah.
Yeah, good lord.
Like, it's
Corey
just
Burton.
It's really there for animation fans more than anything else. But as a point and click, it was still pretty cool. Like, the whole point of the game is kind of deceptively to be like, there's a cutesy world and an evil world, and kind of both sides are dicks and trying to change the other side. But it's really about just like that outstanding animation. And for the actual mechanics, I thought one of the things that was neat was it was a very contextual kind of cursor. So, it would actually change icons when you were over things, and to talk to somebody, you didn't have the normal kind of drop down dialogue tree. You had an ice cube, and when you talk to them, the ice cube melts a certain degree, and when it's out, that's all the conversation you've had with that person. And certain things, you know, are very distinct to that person. One of the interesting and frustrating things about this game is that it sold like shit and was made to be a two-parter. Like, the second part was basically made. Like, a lot of the assets are actually there on the disc and have been unlocked and put online and such and kind of found. But, you know, the game ends on a very specific cliffhanger, so... It didn't quite get to everything it wanted to, but puzzles were mostly very entertaining, and yeah, I was very engaged in that game. So it was neat that that's the first time that this has been kind of playable. Gaga got this one out in February, I believe it was.
Yep.
So for half price, that's a pretty cool game. You know, it's it kind of pushes that trying to be naughty thing a few times, sometimes successful, sometimes not.
Well, it was 96.
But it was 96. You know, there's some cows that, like, when they change from good to bad, turn into these weird dominatrix bondage slave things that are pretty funny. And that was, like, from reading up, that was the big, like, they were trying to show how edgy this game was.
Oh.
So this was kind of, like, the scene that they always kind of, like, showed off, which was funny. But there wasn't really anything that quite lived up to that side of things. But yeah, that's a cool game.
Fine. It's always interesting to see games that we may have missed in the 90s or that were PC and, like, you know, geared toward maybe a more adult audience. And
yeah,
as a moment lost in time, I'm sure it was fascinating to play.
Like, that's kind of, I mean, like, I feel bad for Virgin, honestly, because they couldn't sell this to anybody. Like, it's trying to be dirty, so you can't sell it to kids. It's cartoons and adult, and it looks like an FMV game when people were realizing what FMV games quality thereof. So, yeah, I'm sure it was a disaster. On to that little Sega 3D Classic sale on the 3DS.
Yeah.
Played a lot of Galaxy Force 2. I really like that game.
That's a great game, huh?
That is a great game.
Yeah.
I had to bump up the energy and shields all the way so that I don't die a lot. I think my biggest thing with the energy is that I don't hit the accelerator until, like, the last level when I notice that my energy is almost out. Like, otherwise, I'm playing it very carefully. But
I'm still game to leave them at the default levels and just... a part of me feels like it's cheating to begin a new game at a later level, like, because I know that there are separate scores for each one. But yeah, I want to play through the whole thing eventually. So I guess I try to, at what point am I going to...
Right.
I don't know why that's cheating, but...
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, it is cheating.
It's a double standard there. It's sure. Yeah.
It feels like cheating, but they give you the option.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not, you're not breaking the game.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just so spectacular to see.
Yeah, it really is.
And I tried
is.
To show, like, it to Jan, because, and she's just like, okay. Because she has no... It's another kind of, it's a lost classic from a time when not many people saw it at the time. And you go back to it today and you're like, holy shit, I can't believe they did this in 1988 through just sheer let's jam as many chips in this arcade machine. Doesn't matter how much money it costs. It's an arcade machine. Fuck it. Yeah. Let's just throw in as much memory as it can possibly handle. And 88.
It was just... Oh, what game came out in 88? That was a year before Mario 3.
Yep.
It's like Mega Man 2.
Yeah, Mario 2 was released in the United States.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, this is... God. And, like, that sound chip is... Like, I love the music and the sound chip in that game.
Yeah.
Like, it's instantly nostalgic, even though I never heard that music. And, like, the 3D works really
good. I know what you mean. That particular synth sound of that era just... Yep. Yeah. Takes me back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one I've played the most. I played a little Shinobi 3 with the other one that I bought on that sale.
I was waffling between that one and Sonic, and I ended up getting Sonic.
I kind of did that too, actually. I went to Bob Mackey's
compared to Sega's other big 1980 arcade release, Altered Beast.
Right. Hey, that was on that list too. I thought about but not really. I love Altered Beast, but it's not one I'm going to play a ton of, but yeah, Shinobi 3, I wanted to play just because I never got to play a ton of the Shinobi games. It's kind of the
I've
one
always
that...
wanted to get into that one because it looks amazing.
It's really cool from what I've played.
I believe I have that cartridge.
Ah.
Or I have it on Sega's Ultimate Genesis Collection.
Yeah, I already have it in several forms, but I know that the 3DS version adds an extra control option that puts the sword and projectiles on different buttons, which I can see the advantage of that without even knowing the game really well. So,
and it's also really crazy to see how well the 3D actually does help the game, just separating layers. And
it was a lot of parallax in that game, right?
I mean, from the first couple stages that I played, even.
Yeah. I kind of regret not grabbing that now.
I'm sure they'll be on sale again. They keep putting those games out. Yeah. 3D Streets of Rage is coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah, Streets of Rage 2. The first one.
Oh, yeah, the first one's already out, right? Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I want to... I mean, like, not Outrun. 3D World Runner was also tempting, and
yeah, I don't think Outrun was on sale.
You mean Space Harrier?
Or Space Harrier? Yeah. Right. I always do that.
Wah, 3D World Runner.
Exactly. Exactly. Space Harrier. The one with the good music.
We call Space Harrier the Bizarro 3D World Runner and not the other way around.
Yeah, I know.
Because that's just us.
All right. I'll move on my list here. Grim Fandango, I've played the most probably out of everything. I've put like 11 hours in already. I've gotten further than I did the first time I played it years ago, which is cool. Seeing the difference is insane because you can switch with a button.
Oh, yeah, one of those.
Yeah, and ugh, just the lighting. The lighting and like what they did with the controls is because the original was infamous for its tank controls, mm-hmm. and which was trying to be different than point-and-clicks at the time, and it was. And it was just kind of hard to move around, but they took a custom control scheme from just a guy that had done it online, like a mod, and
oh, wow.
they brought him into the company, and
wow.
it feels a million times better.
That's great. That's so cool.
Yep. And they reorchestrated all the music, which I also bought the music, which is kind of why I wanted it on that Steam sale, with the London Orchestra, which is nice wow. and pretty.
Was it MIDI before?
No, it wasn't MIDI per se. It's you can go back and listen to it in episodes of Victokai because we used a lot of it. But it's a lot nicer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that game's still really great. That game is everything that everybody says. It's an amazing game with some dick puzzles, some really dick puzzles for a point and click in a few cases. But it's just really clever writing. That you leap ahead in time, like you skip from year one to year two, not too far along. And like one of the things that impresses me with the writing in this game is how they fill in the world, not just with the scope of it, even though year two is like the biggest point and click area I've ever fucking been in, which is plus and minus, but writing wise they just talk about things that happened in the past a lot that really in a narrative sense it's just like we used to do this,
we have
this
a life
happened. We have a life, like this character did this, this character did that, that doesn't happen in games enough, I guess. Mm-hmm. Stuff between Manny and Gladys, and there's a lot of stuff that happened within that year leap, but also stuff that was just like way in the past.
That's just for character building and for world building. Yeah.
Yep.
No,
it's just for flavor, even though sometimes it sticks in
your
head.
That's just smart writing.
Yeah. It's just smart writing. Like I wonder if it's
refreshing to
sometimes.
See,
I
should play this game sooner rather than later so that we can talk about it.
Yeah. That's a great game.
I'm looking at it right now.
And it's, that intangible, aesthetic that a game can have. It's just a very unique, between like the, it's one of Peter McConnell's probably best scores, and the unique world and just the way they set everything. Like, it's not just a Day of the Dead kind of thing. It's the Day of the Dead, but it's also this weird business kind of thing because Manny's just selling insurance in a way. Yeah. So you've kind of got this like Brazil plus Day of the Dead, and
I still can't believe GameSpot gave it its Game of the Year award in 98.
Grim?
Yeah.
Over
like Half-Life, StarCraft, Metal Gear Solid, The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Symphony of the Night that year?
I believe that was the year before.
I was going to say, I was a guy for that, I might have been with that. But it was a big year.
And Resident Evil 2. That was, that was a fucking hell of a year that year. It's crazy still.
Let's see. Only a couple other quickies on here. On that bundle, the Gale bundle. I got the only one I played on there actually is Gravity Ghost, which is really fun because I heard it was just kind of a very relaxing game, and it's like the easy way to describe it is 2D Mario Galaxy. in that it's, all right. you're hopping like you
between planetoids and
between planetoids
and there's gravity involved
and there's gravity. I mean, like the main gameplay is like orbital is just kind of controlling yourself in the orbit, which one feels really nice, but two, there is an actually really interesting story going on. So every once in a while, when you unlock those story bits, it's very satisfying. So it's a really nice game in between games right now. It's
I played A City Sleeps for about a minute, and then I had to do something else.
Oh, right.
That was also in that sale, which is very exciting because I was looking for that to go on sale on the Steam sale, which it didn't, but then it got in the bundle. Hell yeah.
Well, I was looking at Sunset for the same thing, even though people don't love Sunset, I really want to play it.
That was an interesting story with Sunset.
Yeah.
For those that don't know that, that developer closed its doors because Sunset sold 4,000 copies. And it was reading that story that I discovered this game called Sunset that they had put out. Like, I had never heard of it before.
I had actually seen a little coverage of it before it came out.
Yeah, like there was a story on really cool released. I just was not on my radar at all, and now it's like in this bundle on sale. Other sites are reviewing it now. It's just funny.
It was on my Twitter a lot of just kind of. It was on my radar because I liked whenever I saw the trailer for it. I liked the idea of it, anyways.
Yeah,
but that was about it.
But for that purpose, like when I bought the bundle, I kind of like bumped my portion for developers a bit higher.
Yep,
than
I
normal.
Did that too.
I was like, oh, I feel so bad for those guys. Like whether I've played the game or not, whether it's great or not, just like they were trying to make a game that would have broader appeal,
right?
Yeah,
and it just blew up in their fucking face.
Too bad.
Sad.
Yeah. Lastly, I played two Steam demos. Quickly, I played Yatagarasu Attack, 2D fighter. That's pretty cool. I wish I could play more characters in that demo, but I guess that's the point of buying the damn game. It feels like King of Fighters to me. Like late 90s King of Fighters, which is a compliment. Nice.
Does it have teams?
No, you have an assist.
Okay.
And I wasn't quite sure how they were helping me, honestly. But they were funny.
Not even fucking doing anything. Jeez.
Well, it was sort of like the way Virtua Fighter 5 has their like guys on the arcade, like kind of like that head that pops in and says things.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were doing something, but as a four button. Fighter.
Well, they're like commentators, aren't they? I mean, one of them is.
Yeah, they were definitely commentators.
Oh, yeah, I heard there's a lot of commentary options in that game, for better or worse.
Maybe that's all that they were then. But. No, it was nice. I mean, I played through the entire arcade campaign until I got stopped, but I made a pretty good run.
Always reminded me more of Third Strike than.
I also King hear that comparison.
I heard that a
Third Strike, King of Fighters. Yeah,
I think it was because of the. I think there's a parry system. I didn't really quite get it.
Captures a very specific era and of fighting game history.
I mean, it's actually. I think the lead artist on it was an artist who worked on King of Fighters in the late 90s at that time.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
No, it is people, ex-SNK people making an old SNK fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last demo, and it's because I liked this demo so much, I want to talk about it. Talk about things that weren't on my radar. I saw Anthony Birch, who writer for Borderlands 2 and such, talk about this game called The Magic Circle. And his sister's in it, so he's got some bias, but he was saying this was a very, very good game, and I saw another person say this was a really, really good game. I played this demo, and I'll probably be buying this game once it goes on sale. The Magic Circle is very kind of in that fourth wall Stanley Parable portal kind of vein, and it's really hard to describe. For voice actors, James Urbaniak, Dr. Venture, is a game developer whose game has kind of been in development hell. And you are a playtester in the game, and the game is sick and tired of this world not being finished and is trying to get you basically to break it in a couple different interesting ways. The writing was very, very clever, and like once I saw people talking about it, it was a lot of people saying like it's kind of the best view of making a game from the inside, sort of in a way. And it's a lot of kind of like what they want you to do is say an enemy comes up to you, you trap it, and then you can hack this enemy and say, okay, you don't attack me, you attack this. You don't use melee, you use this. You don't travel by this means, I can pick you up, etc., etc. And the more enemies that you like trap or things or plants or whatever, you can steal their abilities and put them on other things. So that opens up a whole world of just what you can put into this, into that, and just being led around. And you've kind of got this, like, James Urbaniak and one other person and Ashley Birch are these kind of, like, floating god heads, like, doing things to the world and, like, kind of describing this half-made world. And yeah, like, and there's a pretty fleshed out demo that's totally worth checking out. Yeah. And this game came out of fucking nowhere, but it's really clever. So I dig it.
Dave, you touch anything?
I touched some things I wanted to touch, some things I didn't want to touch. You know, summertime, I actually have
did
far
anyone
less...
force you to touch anything?
Yeah. That part I'm only going to talk about a little bit.
Show us on the podcast
litigation.
On the advice of my lawyers, I'm going to have to limit what I say about that.
Okay.
No, in the summertime, actually have far less time to play video games.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, how like your life is busier during the summer because Jan is home.
Because my family wants to take me out of the house and do things. Ugh. Yesterday, we had to go to a street festival and look at artists and music and things. God.
You met a fairy.
We had terrible food and it was... we met a fairy.
end up with some days where it's like they're going to have a girl's day and you're just in the house for 8 hours or something like that. And
those are the days when I work.
Boo.
Because that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah,
it's
you're
on
working
vacation,
then,
but right. I'm still working my ass off trying to book voiceover work all the time. So they do leave me alone when I have to do some work. Actually, next week I get to pretend to be Alex Trebek.
It's so fun.
I've never done that, but I don't do it very well. I don't know why they hired me, but the couple of things that I did do is I got those 3D classics. I got to play got to touch some Galaxy Force and some 3D Sonic the Hedgehog, which, you know, is interesting. I don't want to say I regret the purchase. I was hoping it would give me a new appreciation for Sonic the Hedgehog, and maybe when I spend some more time with it, it will. One of Jan's friends got her husband a retro Duo, a clone, a Famicom clone that plays Nintendo and Super Nintendo games. It's got both cartridge ports and it's got it's Super Nintendo style controller ports built in. So we went over their house one night and I brought a custom, you know, curated selection of games that some games he might not. You know, he's the kind of dude who, like, they were thrilled when they found an old Nintendo in their parents' basement a few months ago. And, like, so they eBayed a copy of Marble Madness for $10. Like, you know, they're the lapsed people who, like, think, oh, this is so much fun. So I tried to curate a little collection. I went over there to play some games with the
Make
dude.
Them sound like idiots.
They're not.
I think Marble Madness is
normals,
fun.
You know, yeah. They're people that it's like so many people. They play video games on their phones all the time, but don't consider themselves gamers. And they found a Nintendo and they're like, oh, this is so cool. I remember this from when I was a kid. So with that in mind, I curated a selection of Nintendo and Super Nintendo games that I thought either he might be familiar with or B, he might not. And we went over and we played some. We actually had a really super fun night. Mm-hmm. I got to spend more time with NBA Jam than I ever had before and learned to have a really fun time with it. Which played
Super, I assume?
It was the Super version of NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
Okay.
And we played that, and we played the original NES ice hockey. Like, those were his picks, you know, the sports games.
Yeah.
The ice hockey was, I kind of dominated him in ice hockey, I'd sad to say. But, I mean, that's a really fun classic, you know, arcade-style sports game.
We played a little fat guys.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Goddamn right. So we had a really fun night doing that. We played some Battletoads. We played the Super Nintendo port of Alpha 2. That was a deep cut that I'm sure
you
probably hadn't
played.
You played
Alf for NES.
I know.
We played some Alf game with fucking for the Alf. NES. No, we played. If you're gonna play Alf, you play the Master System game.
Yeah.
So that was cool, and that's.
Man, that Super Nintendo port of Alpha 2, that is such an interesting game.
I know.
It's like those backgrounds are such garbage.
That's why I brought it over, because I felt like if he ever had a Super Nintendo at that time, he probably never saw a game that looked like that.
Yeah.
Running on Super Nintendo. So I thought it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I haven't played too much, but for my birthday, Jan got me a copy of the, you know, gamer culture popular novel, Ready Player One.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I can talk to you about that. I don't know.
Yeah?
Tim, did you read it?
Nope, not yet.
Yeah, okay.
So far, I don't care for it.
No. Okay. Now, it's... Do you think... Are you in the crowd that feels like it's pandering? Is that where you are?
No. Okay. No, I totally...
Because I do argue that, yeah.
Okay, yeah, no. I can tell that the guy that wrote this book really has a love and a reverence for the source material. The way he talks about it feels perfectly authentic. It's totally not that. It's that I just don't like the way this guy writes. Okay. I know that it's his first novel, and I don't want to say that knowing that has clouded my judgment. It's just I get no sense of voice from his writing. There are some authors that you read and you're just like, oh, I love this way this author had, you know, could turn a particular phrase, the way they draw their characters just really hooks me and makes me want to keep getting into this world. And I just get none of that. It's like his writing is just perfunctory. He's describing what's going on, but I don't feel like the characters have any inner life. I don't feel like they have any particular thing about them that hooks me and makes me want to get to know them more.
How far are you?
I'm very early in. I'm only maybe in chapter two. So far. I mean, I'm going
to
keep
having the first 10 pages of this book. It's a piece of shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not a, you know, a seasoned author's work. Mm-hmm. I'll say that. Like, by halfway, I had a very particular feel for that world, whether it's, I mean, there's a lot of archetype and there's a lot of, and it's sort of playing on that and sort of not. And I mean, like, it's a remix of things, like, you know, that going in, you know, really it's a Willy Wonka story,
and,
you know,
and that's the only other thing that sort of takes me out of the world sometimes is that, Tim, for your edification, part of the story is that we are in the future, but
I'm familiar with it. Yeah,
okay, yeah. Circumstances are such that the 80s popular culture has made a resurgence.
Right,
right.
And yet, so there's precedent for that and for, you know, name-dropping things about the 80s. But then, so far, there's already a lot of stuff that feels like current. It feels like 2015 internet parlance. And that feels like by then it would be dated and there is no precedent for bringing it back by that. It feels like he's only throwing that in because it's the way we talk about those things now.
No, I can.
Without getting too specific, but
that
like
is a total
calling.
Fairly fair argument. Like, I can't.
The Sixers, who are, he says, we call them the Suxors. That feels like a very, you know, 2000s internet thing to say. That I feel like would be painfully outdated by 2045. There's little touches like that that just make me, I don't know. That it's not that it's amateurish. He's perfectly competent, but I'm not finding anything to love so far.
Yeah. Like, all I could say is, you know, give it a little more time. Like, it's interesting because it's been built up, I think, at this point, too. And, you know, Spielberg's making a damn movie out of it.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because he's kind of the only one who has the rights to so many of those properties that I don't think anyone else really could have done it.
Yeah.
It starts to, like, Steve had the same thing as me of just, and I mean, I get this a lot, but the back end of that book was just like a race for a lot of it. So, so there is story hooks at least. I think.
I'll plow ahead. That's it for me for games, I think. Unless I think of something.
Cool. Let's talk about some movies.
Okay. Right. Oh, movies.
I don't think any of us have seen the number one opening weekend made so much money.
Nope.
Fucking Jurassic World.
Nope.
No.
What really, and it's just a rumor for now, but Colin Trevorrow is the guy that directed Jurassic World, is the guy who's rumored to be doing episode 9 right now. And most critics that I read are very disappointed with this, because most of them are not fond of Jurassic World. But the public at large probably would be.
Is very excited. Yeah, I'll see it at some point.
Yeah.
I do want to see it on a screen, big one, because of dinosaurs, but we'll see. It just kind of blew my mind at how much money that movie made. I think it blew a lot of minds. It also blows my mind that like Chris Pratt was in the number one summer movie 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Thinking about it 3 years ago would be crazy.
Yeah.
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 Saw Miller, speaking of upcoming Star Wars films, saw that Miller and Lord will be directing that Han Solo joint. That's cool.
Those are the only people I would care about a Han Solo movie.
Yeah, yeah. But well, it depends on who really they cast as Han Solo, too. I think they could do something. If it's a casting choice that makes me go, oh, that's great. And I don't know who that would be. But
I think an unknown, but I always go unknown. Like, it's funny because the internet's just like, oh, Chris Pratt. And it's like, the one person they're not going to pick is Chris Pratt right now.
I don't think he's young enough. I mean, how young are they going? I mean, like,
I don't know. But
Harrison Ford was not an old man. And,
exactly.
Yeah, like, he went slightly
younger. He was, like, of that crowd, he was the weathered
guy. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's,
he had seen some shit.
Chris Pratt, he's pushing it. Chris Pratt would be pushing it.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, even, it's just such, one, an obvious, and two, he's just been in so much stuff right now that it's...
Yeah, it needs someone with, like, less baggage coming in.
I want River Phoenix. Ah. Damn it. I mean, it's such a good indie. Tons of Star Wars news and all that shit. We don't need to go into a ton, but I love the behind-the-scenes footage that they showed at Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's totally just like seeing all this joy for making the movie and seeing, I mean, it's like everybody says, puppets and makeup.
Puppets, makeup,
and practical effects.
The showing that Simon Pegg's in the movie, like that wasn't announced before.
Yeah, well, I saw him there and I was kind of like, did I?
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in some kind of costume with the helmet off.
It's fun. Crazy.
Yeah. So much joy.
Oh my God. Well, we'll see how much joy there is after the movie comes out.
Yeah.
Let me just cast down your expectations a little, like we all need to do.
It just seems like everything's right. So yeah, hopeful. Like
And then the next guy comes in to do 8 and is just like, nah, I want to do everything with CG.
And that's Rian Johnson. I don't think that's Mr. Looper.
Yeah.
He should be all right. Mr. Looper.
Is J.J. Abrams still like a producer?
I'm pretty sure he's in a producer role.
Yeah. Just directing the first one. That's good. That's good that they're changing it up between them. God, so much Star Wars. They're doing 2 years between the major ones releases.
Yeah, but they're having the in-betweener movies in between them.
Right. So there's a Star Wars movie every year, but
yes,
like previously the big episode trilogies were spaced out by 3 years apiece.
Right. Yeah.
So that is a...
That seems soon, but I guess...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how they whip around movies these days is...
Yeah.
Couple years. Anyways, I saw Inside Out.
I think we all
saw Inside Out.
We all saw Inside Out.
Okay. I wasn't sure if Dave did. Yeah, I thought
I took my daughter to see Inside Out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I really like that movie.
I cried a lot during that movie.
Yeah.
I was not looking forward to that movie from the trailers. The trailers weren't doing a lot. I thought that a lot of it would be very the gags that they were doing in the trailers felt like very on the nose. Like, come on, you guys, they did this 20 years ago in Herman's head.
I didn't even watch a trailer, I don't think.
Okay.
I saw a trailer when we took her to see Cinderella.
Okay.
But
specifically, when I did my write up, I said, this isn't Herman's Head. I know the trailers look like Herman's Head. Everyone's made Herman's Head. Herman's Head. Yeah.
But Amy Poehler fucking carries a film like a champ.
Well, and Phyllis Smith, too.
Yeah.
Like, very, she was good, really
very good,
good
foil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
good performance. I no idea that the dad was Kyle MacLachlan, until the credits rolled. I was so pleasantly surprised that it was not the movie I thought it was. Well, I mean, I guess it was still the movie, but it was much. It came out. Everything was done much better than my expectations had led me to believe they would. And I definitely, I'm going to guess, Weiss, maybe you didn't cry as much as I did.
It sounds like you cried a lot.
I cried a lot.
Is it because you have a daughter?
It is because I have a daughter.
Yeah, because I like the movie, but it's not like in my top stratosphere of Pixar films.
I don't think it is for me either. It just it went straight for my dad kidney.
Yeah.
So this is fighting for top spot. This is pretty up there for me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, it was good.
I've got to go back.
Good. No, I mean,
I've
got
to go back
good.
To Incredibles. I've got to go back to WALL-E. It's just, it did such an amazing job of being complex while also being, you know, simple enough for a kid's movie. Like, there was
so much going on. It's something that's great for, like, kids to watch to understand their feelings.
Yeah. Like, well, there's a lot of articles, not just kids, too, just, like, a lot of adults
in general.
Going through. Like, it's just, like,
and that, I thought, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, it was just, like, I thought about that movie a lot afterwards, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for days.
So that was nice. What impressed me was that the visualization of, you know, the psychoanalysis terms were not as cornball as I was afraid they were going to be. Mm-hmm. I was actually, that's actually a really clever way to visualize that and to make a general audience understand that concept. That's good. Good for you.
And they did, Pete Docter did a lot of research for that, too. Mm-hmm. Like, none of that stuff is kind of like pulled out of thin air. It's like,
yeah, that's
memories,
none of it feels
like,
half-assed.
Yeah.
None of it feels like a pun. It all feels meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fucking Bing Bong.
Bing Bong, but it was Goofball Island was the saddest part of that movie.
God Crash. Damn. Love Richard Kind, too. Great to see him.
That was amazing because they hid, or I don't know about hid, but he wasn't in like any of the promotional stuff. Like he's in none of the trailers, nothing. So
such a big part of the movie. I don't know how much of it was just having my daughter sitting there right next to me, but the instinct to want to protect your child from emotion, from the things that would hurt her feelings, from the things that would, that's what kills me that's what made me sob constantly was every time the what's her name, the girl had a difficulty, a challenge, your mind can't help but think to, I cannot, the day when my own daughter has to go through this, the pain that she's gonna feel, that makes me feel awful, that I can't stop that I just have to stand by and let her grow up and live her life. And I know that that's a cliche and it's true. And that was Inside Out for me. It was a very like parent targeted, I know that it's a kid's movie, but it felt directly targeted at parents.
Yeah.
At least to me.
Well, it felt like
maybe
a
if you have a daughter
movies. No, it made me very empathetic. Like, I was watching a mother and age-appropriate daughter, like, in front of me, like, through the movie and just, like, thinking about, you know, what is this mother thinking right now? What is...
Yeah.
And just that whole thing.
Yeah. No, I guess I just don't have a lot to say about it, but I liked it.
Yeah.
It just didn't, like, you know...
I'm happy to have a return to Pixar.
Yeah, right?
If nothing else.
It's still been a while since...
Yeah. I mean, Toy Story 3 for us, I think, was
Story 3, because since then it's been another Cars, Monsters University, Brave was bad.
there was something else that people liked that I...
People love Up, but that was a while longer ago.
That was a while longer ago. Like, obviously, I've given my opinions on Up.
No, not big
I've
on
gone
Up.
Back. I've gone back to WALL-E recently because Jules loves it, and I can still say with confidence that might be my favorite Pixar film.
Yeah.
I got to go back to, you know, I really like Wally, of course.
Love Wally. But yeah, no, I think this movie's better than Up. Up. Except for the first 15 minutes of that
movie, yeah.
Which are like the best shit.
I've seen some critics kind of go back on it now, or at least like emphasize, you know, like, you know, people love Up, but well, you know, the first 20 minutes is one of the best Pixar movies, and the rest is a movie.
Yeah.
You know, the rest exists.
Yeah. I wasn't too big on Lava either, the short.
I liked Lava. I think I was more impressed visually than I was with the actual. Like, I thought it was cute. I thought it was, like, nice to have, like, a wholesome thing. But it wasn't the cloud short in front of...
No.
What was that? Toy Story had that one,
I think? I think that was Toy Story 3.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite ones.
Yeah, I love that one.
It was a sweet little song, but it also felt just, like, very... Like, they were really engineered. Like, how close can we write to that ukulele cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow without actually copying that song?
Oh, God.
Well, I feel like they're opening... you know, their shorts they put in front of their movies, like, kind of, yeah, they always wrap up kind of nicely. They have pretty similar, you know, themes and feels to them at this point. I mean, I haven't seen, I guess, the last few, but I don't know.
The upcoming one is apparently really good. People are very excited for.
Oh, for the one in front of what's next year?
This year.
Oh, this year. This year. That's right.
Later this year.
Yeah,
The dinosaur one.
Right.
Yeah, the What If dinosaur one, which is kind of interesting. They haven't given a full trailer for, so I'm curious.
Yeah, I didn't see anything else in the theater. I did pass up. So Lauren and I pretty much refused to go to the drive-in on Friday or Saturday because it's a fucking nut house there. And we just don't want to deal with it. And like this weekend they have Minions on two screens, so I'm sure that would be... And it's like, you know, we obviously we're not going to see fucking Minions, but we'd still have to deal with all the bullshit to get in there.
Yeah.
But they had a triple feature with Jurassic World, Terminator, and then Ex Machina.
Oh, wow.
Which all three of those for $9. It's that's for whatever range of. I mean, you'd probably end on the best movie for sure.
Yeah.
But like, that would have been so good. But we
you'd
were just
be
like,
so worn out for the slow movie.
I know.
Well, that's what we were saying. It's just like we would be dead. Or it's because, you know, Dickie would probably sleep through all of it. And then we would just be so full of regret the next day.
Yeah,
there's so many layers of why this was a bad idea. But like.
On paper, that's an excellent value proposition.
Yeah, like last year, we probably would have done that and just said, fuck it, but...
Right.
Fucking Minions, man. we did revisit Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie on a second watch.
Cool. I'm excited to see that again. Someone else, Zoe Quinn, was talking about it.
Yeah, I've seen
Twitter.
A lot of people talking about it. Was it Brian K. Vaughan, maybe, in the back of Saga, or...
Really?
Yeah, well, like mentioned
I haven't, you know, obviously.
Yeah. It was in the letters page, either that or We Stand on Guard.
Ah, okay.
He mentioned that, hey, people should go see the Wachowskis' Jupiter Ascending. It's really cool.
Nice.
And I saw a couple other people mention it. And it's like, yeah, it's still really cool. You know, warts and all.
Yeah.
But
well, it's the movie, and that's kind of how it came back into my radar, is people saying it's the, you know, these weird movies that people made exactly how they wanted to make them. Like,
yeah.
That's the kind of the cool thing with Jupiter Ascending. It's obviously like Wachowski's wanted to do this crazy fucking thing, whether people liked it or not.
Sure. Yeah. So that was cool. It just, you know, it reminds me of crap that I would watch on cable on a Saturday afternoon back in the day. And just like, which actually led to me watching The Running Man.
Nice.
And I finally saw the beginning of that movie.
Oh, you never saw the beginning?
I've never seen the beginning.
Oh, like, I've seen the beginning a lot.
Yeah, like I've never seen it. I just like always pick up, you know, like when he's
opera
breaking
guy or...
when he's like breaking into the girl's apartment. Like so everything before that, like I never see like the prison break or the actual incident that got him in prison. And watching it made me realize how much Nobuo Uematsu ripped off the theme for Final Fantasy VII Mako Reactor track. Like, holy shit. Holy fucking shit. And, of course, I immediately Googled it. And, like, yeah, people have already realized that. But watching it, I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's exactly like Final Fantasy VII music.
Inspired by...
I guess leafing off a Running Man. I didn't get to finish it last night, but I was watching Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
Because I haven't gone back to the second one in forever. And my one note on that is just watch the opening scene, because the Kraft Foam costumes are hysterical. And it's like, you know, they're kind of making fun of themselves. And I didn't realize it at the time because, you know, it's like, aha, these two dumb guys are the future. So the future's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I got that. But the costumes are so, and especially because like the quality on Netflix was looking pretty good. Mm. You can just see the details of just, it's shit that's laying around like Steve's, you know, room, like the foam pieces that are just brightly colored and puzzled together. And it's amazing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I revisited a couple 2014 films that I've been meaning to catch up on.
Cool.
Watched The Theory of Everything last night.
Oh, okay.
That's a adequately made film that did not entertain me at all.
I heard a lot of kind of mixed, even though it was built up a lot Oscar-wise.
You know what? They both give fine performances in a film. It's the biopic problem of this is a real story, and so we have to follow the way it really happened, and so we have to try to dramatize things that probably just happened the same fucking way everything happens to ordinary people. So you get this feel like, how does this amazingly beautiful girl fall in love with fucking stupid looking doofy young Stephen Hawking?
Yeah.
Who, and so the, it was this painfully like cringeworthy screenwriter's trick where he spouts some kind of technical sounding thing about stars, and it just sounds so romantic, and I'm like, come on, like. If any real person would be like, well, I gotta go. Have a good night, Steven. It was very nice to meet you. I'm not gonna give you my phone number. And then she fucking gives her phone number. I'm like, how? What did anything he just do attract you to him?
I like the transition, by the way, from Jupiter Ascending to Theory of Everything through Eddie Redmayne, who I know as a crazy fucking villain, and everyone else knows as Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
I know him as he was in the Les Mis movie. He was young hero in the Les Mis movie.
He's been getting a lot of momentum lately, and I'm just that guy from Jupiter Ascending, who I loved. But.
No, good actor. Great actor. Eddie Redmayne, well done. And you know, it is difficult. It is a feat to spend hours filming, contorting your body to convincingly play Stephen Hawking. He does a remarkable job, but I mean, that's a technical, it's not artistry. It's just, it's torture. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. It was a very well-made movie that did nothing to entertain me. Mm-hmm. Saw Selma. Really liked Selma.
I really want to see Selma. Yeah.
Delighted to see that Selma was kind of the opposite kind of biopic. Like, this is I really like the way this movie is made. I like every artistic choice in this movie. I like the narrative through line that they have chosen. I saw a lot of parallels to Spielberg's Lincoln. You know, not trying to tell a guy's whole fucking life story, but just focusing on sort of a singular moment in order to convey what kind of person they were and just one struggle, you know, because that's just one story. It's enough for a movie to just tell one story.
Yeah.
Selma does a great job, awesome. Especially for a first time director and good. Can't wait to see what she does next.
Not Black Panther, unfortunately. Fortunately.
Unfortunately for us. Fortunate for her, probably. It's just not the movie she wanted to make. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Finally, a week before it went up on Netflix, I saw Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I really want to see Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
it's a really good
movie.
I just popped that in my queue and I'm just waiting for the opportunity to watch it.
That's really good. Watch that movie. I'll
probably be watching it this week.
Yeah, I'll watch it sooner. Yeah, I've been obviously
sooner than you.
Well, I've been watching a lot more Netflix, and I just finished S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2 today, which was way better than Season 1 in so many ways.
Isn't Kyle MacLachlan awesome in that show?
Who's that?
It's Daisy's dad.
Yeah. He was good. Mr. Hyde.
Yep.
Kelvin Zabo. Okay, so here's what sucked, and this is casual comics talk, but just like, so before... So I found out about the whole relationship of who the Doctor is and who Skye is in the comic books.
Right.
Reading S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's
and I was
too
just
bad.
Like, Yeah, and I was like, fuck, because then like the next episode, it was like when kind of that stuff started to unravel, where I was like, fucking God,
that was
damn
one
it.
Of the big
I was like, damn it, fuck. Maybe really turned me off of continuing to pick up that comic book.
Yeah.
Right. Like, fuck. I can't do this if you're going to expect me to have watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, well, whatever.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. Anyways. All right. So.
Yeah.
Let's go through some news. I didn't write down a lot of more recent happenings, unfortunately. It's like one of those things where, you know,
right.
Sometimes I think to write down something. Mostly I was kind of picking up post E3 stuff when I started this.
Yeah, but, a lot of fallout here and there, you know.
Just want to mention something about Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem. I'm not sure if that's something I want anymore.
I know.
Like, that game is so anime up the ass with like very little,
because
it's not a crossover between those two series. It kind of is semi inspired by them, and it just looks like crazy anime, over the top.
It's Dale North's dream,
I guess. What it is, but I'm just like, I don't know anymore.
Because I watched the live stream of it, and that's when I kind of made my decision of, I think I'm gonna wait until I hear, you know. It's just, it's too much. It's, it just has no connection for me right now.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like fucking Final Fantasy, like a more interesting Final Fantasy X2 kind of thing,
I guess.
With like, because there's so much clothing stuff in the battle system.
Just don't know what to make of it at all. Transformers Devastation looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I stopped watching videos of that.
For whatever may come, like when I saw like the first combat video of, you know, Optimus Prime transforming and non-transforming and hitting him with his trailer, I'm just like, all right, this looks pretty pretty slick for whatever may come of it. No Man's Sky was announced to be day and date on PC with the PS4 version. That's good.
Oh, great.
Yep. Killer Instinct is coming to PC.
Yes, it is.
Which I didn't think I would be excited for 2 years ago, but just given, you know,
really interested.
The support that game has gotten and how popular it seems to be, I'm really interested to check it out.
Yeah. I'll at least demo it.
Yeah, at the very least. I mean, I'm, you know, eventually I'm sure there will be good deals.
Oh,
but,
yeah, Steam.
Yeah, Steam and whatever. But yeah, no, I'm glad. After initially being disappointed after E3, there was no mention. There sounds like we may be getting Dragon Quest 7 and 8.
Yeah,
on 3DS.
Nothing official, but they leaked.
Leaked
a little thing on Twitter, so it sounds like it's coming.
The localization director
basically said it, just didn't give a date.
It's just scary that like if they're working on both of those at the same time, because those are huge games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are
very different
huge.
Games. It's not like,
right.
And it really tears me up because I am very starved for more Dragon Quest. I was considering importing Dragon Quest Heroes, but it's coming over here on PS4 at least, so eventually someday I'll be able to get an English copy. But
get myself a local.
It's like I never finished Dragon Quest VII, but I really liked it. I'm really excited to replay Dragon Quest VIII.
Which I never finished couple times
which
over.
Which I would absolutely love to play through that game again.
Yeah.
So I am super pumped that both those games are coming out over here. Possibly. Maybe. Stay tuned, I guess. And there's a Rampage movie coming.
Oh, right.
Starring The Rock.
Starring The Rock. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not putting any... See, my thing is, like, they're not showing anything. He's not cast as, like, a monster, meaning he's... Oh, my phone has something to say. Apparently, it sounds like a monster. right. It's been doing that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where I could see this project just kind of going into a gutter and being forgotten for years later, and I don't know. I'm kind of scared until
it's like, you know,
details.
He's cast as Black Adam, and that movie's coming when?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like... But still, it's just like...
Well, it's like that Uncharted movie is pretty much, like, on the shelf, I think, right now, and... However, many other video game movies aside from...
Well, also The Rock, you know, also announced that he was doing that Big Trouble in Little China remake
right.
that everyone was so excited about.
Yeah.
And it's just, I just thought, like, well, it was funny because there was that whole thing with Uwe Boll, like, losing his shit.
My favorite video.
Because, yeah, I mean, I think that was probably since the last podcast, too. I don't think we talked about that. Uwe Boll's Kickstarter failing.
Third.
His third attempt at crowdfunding failing. Yeah. Despite the fact that he has enough money to play golf every day the rest of his life.
Yeah. So fuck you. Yeah. A lot.
Yes. But he was trying to fund a movie called Rampage, and I had to explain to my coworker, like, no, it is not the Rampage you're thinking of. It's some other thing called Rampage. And then here is a movie based on Rampage. Of all things.
Yeah. I don't know.
Whatever.
Like, I love Rampage. I just don't think it would make a good movie.
Well, okay. What was this movie that The Rock was in recently about
San Andreas?
San Andreas. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty successful, right? I mean, it made its money.
The Rock's in tons of successful movies.
Oh yeah. I'm not worried about him.
I remember seeing something shortly after that movie, like, had a really good opening weekend or something, like, saying, like, so The Rock and disaster movies. This is a pretty good pairing, huh? Expect to see The Rock in more disaster movies.
Right.
So I this feels like kind of a natural natural economic decision, at least, you know, given that what he had one successful movie in this genre, they're going to make another. Just, you know, Rampage, the plot, whatever plot was there in a Midway arcade game.
It was like the San Andreas producer director, too, I believe.
Oh, really? Okay. Well,
it was attached to it. So, yeah, it was like their next project, which probably means it's going to happen because that movie made bank worldwide anyways. Mm-hmm. I saw someone complaining about, I mean, I guess more lamenting how The Rock is this huge movie star, but he doesn't really have, like, his signature, like, Rambo. Well, he doesn't have, like, signature role, like the classic 80s action stars.
We're not really, I mean, like, aside from The Transporter, there hasn't really been, like, a movie for a guy. Like, action-wise, unless they're a superhero. I think, like, that's what the superhero movies are now.
Movie star, but, there's another model, a very clear historical model for him, and that is Terry Hogan. Terry Hogan had a bunch of, I think, pretty successful film roles when he was big, but his iconic role is Hulk Hogan. Hmm. The Rock already has an iconic role.
His name is not Terry Hogan.
It's not?
No, it's Terry Bollea.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jesus Christ, Dave.
It's Terry.
I know, Hulk Hogan. Yes. Yeah. You're talking about Hulk Hogan, yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
We call him Mr. America here.
Well, I started thinking, I'm like, wait, is he talking about Crocodile Dundee, like Paul Hogan? Like, is that what he meant to say?
The Rock
is very clearly Paul Hogan.
That's a good point.
Just trying to draw a distinction between Dwayne Johnson and ostensibly the role. You know, The Rock is a role that so many people identify him with. You know, I think it's safe to say, after Rocky, people went to the movies to see Rocky. You know, I mean, he kept kind of playing that character in his movie because that's what people wanted to see. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I guess. If you look at it as his iconic role is The Rock, and that's what it's going to be, is that he was Dwayne Johnson was The Rock.
Because generally, once you have one, until, you know, maybe 10-20 years pass and you're lucky.
That's a good way of looking at it, and probably at least that's why he has not had a film franchise. I think it was on Grantland. I was reading. They didn't look outside the box enough to realize that he already did his signature role, like the thing that everybody knows him for. Was playing The Rock,
right?
Because of just kind of the way that people perceive wrestling and. Those characters that end up kind of being inseparable from the people that play them.
Maybe it doesn't have the prestige of a film franchise, but he's going to go down in history as The Rock.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. Nope.
And made millions and millions of dollars as The Rock. So.
Yeah. Yep. Nope. Correct.
Did we want to do any fucking Comic-Con?
Yeah, I feel we have to do some Comic-Con stuff because a casual comics recording is a ways away. And here we are.
And none of it's comics related anyway.
Well, much ado, about fucking Batman versus Superman in that trailer.
Sure. That's good for people that like it.
That's a way better trailer than that first one. I mean,
it's about the same to me. I just didn't get a ton of, like, the emotion I got was out of Wonder Woman and weird Lex Luthor.
Well, in this sense, I got something out of this trailer where I got nothing out of the first one. Okay. So, like,
that's true.
That's progress.
Yeah. No, it's comparing rotten apples from rotten apples.
But I guess.
I don't know. It's just.
How is Wonder Woman fitting into this movie? Okay.
With a big hand pushing her in, like, and making action figures kiss.
Yeah. I thought she looked fucking great.
Yeah. No, like, I thought she did too. Like, and as a. Lex Luthor just seems so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, I love Michael Cera's
Jesse Eisenberg. I love the red capes are coming.
Yeah, that was hysterical.
The red capes are coming.
I know. It's like he's Bane without a voice augment.
Yeah, but it's like they are doing a lot of stuff in this movie.
Yes.
As a Superman sequel where Batman is the first build character, and that they are introducing this version of Batman. Now, okay, so maybe you can answer me this. So,
all right.
He has been Batman in this universe before.
He's supposed to be an aged, older, kind of grumpy
Batman. But he has not been Batman in a long time. Am I getting that correct?
That I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that, like, he is returning as the Dark Knight, or is he...
Could be the Dark Knight Returns kind of
thing. I know there was a much, you know, they read fucking quotes at Comic-Con like 3 years ago about it.
They're doing the animated Killing Joke, just in case you wanted every Batman story ever told. Again. But
So I was just trying to figure out from watching that. I mean, it does seem like he was, like, Batman had already existed, and it wasn't like Batman was
right.
Because the first time I watched the trailer, I was getting the impression that, like, Bruce Wayne got mad because his building got destroyed and people died, and then he decided to become Batman.
I thought that too, but I know that that's not what they're going for.
I watched it a second time, and then I realized that, like, okay, that I don't think that's the case. So they were showing, you know, the whole Crime Alley bullshit again, and, like, I am so over the origin stories of Batman and Spider-Man right now. I just never ever need to see them again. Like,
of course.
We know. I'm just really not into Ben Affleck in his steely, angry Batman.
There was the fellow who directed Hobo with a Shotgun kept putting up pictures of garbage bags to simulate the costume of Batman.
Yeah.
I'm just getting no feel. Like, it feels like they're putting big plot versus big plot, but I just have no hook. Like, I have no care. Like, my thing, like, the Superman as a villain thing is interesting, and I like that idea, but it's sort of like the way Winter Soldier was for me, where, like, I like the idea of it being a 70s throwback conspiracy anti-government movie, but I don't know, just walking through the paces doesn't feel like it's doing anything for me.
That's my general feeling about Zack Snyder's complete oeuvre, is that I feel like, man, you know what? That's a kick-ass idea. If only you could actually follow through with it with any amount of artistry or humanity or, like, a real, like, emotional
connection to humanity.
That's
something that's really missing a lot.
And yes.
Man,
300 was great the first time I saw it.
300 was great. It's his best movie that I've seen. I didn't see his crazy fetish fight movie. But
Rory liked it.
Yeah. I am still it's still the feeling of just DC moving so hard, so fast, and you know, get Lex Luthor and Batman and Wonder Woman all in this movie.
Right.
And I don't know. I know people are freaking out. I feel bad to be like a downer on it.
I know.
No, I don't feel bad being a downer on it. I mean, DC does not have their shit.
I hate to be that guy.
Right.
Like, I want everyone to enjoy their movies. And if, like, all the DC people who enjoy Man of Steel and whatever go and love this movie, then fucking great.
Yeah.
That's great.
But this is what DC has done to themselves. Like, they've done themselves no favors in terms of broadening their audience by not... You know, by having to play catch up with Marvel's big grand initiative here. So this is their own fault.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the only creative auteur they have to sort of latch onto is Zack Snyder, well, he's what they got.
The coattails of Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's coat weird tails. Because
very much coat
yes,
tails.
Like he has already walked out. His tails are still dragging behind yeah. him.
Yeah, he's still on his producing.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah,
but it's just weird because I mean we've been over it before, but like DC just doesn't realize the things they have, even aside from the comics. I mean, like one of the journalists that was covering the Flash panel was like crying because people are so into the Flash TV show right now. Like, DC's doing an amazing job there. There's people that are very devoted to Arrow right now. And, like, mm-hmm. if they brought that into the films, like, even though Lord and Miller are doing a Flash movie, and I'm excited because I like Lord and Miller, even though they're everywhere.
People have sniffed them out at this point.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like, the Barry Allen they have on the TV show is really good. And the Jay, I can't remember his name, the original Flash they're bringing in for season two, that's really cool. And
my dad pointed this out to me, in fact, like just 2 days ago. They dropped by, and I don't even remember what we were talking about. But my dad was like, you know, I really think that Marvel is having a lot more success in film, and DC's being really more successful in the television medium.
Sharp as ever.
I know. It was an idea that he came up with all on his own. But, I mean, he's kind of totally into it, I guess, right now. So,
Yeah, it's just that's where the people are most passionate, even if it's not where the money is. Film is still money.
Yeah, I saw. Did I see correctly that Ben Affleck is directing and writing the next Batman movie? Which is those two things are great.
Yeah, directing's
he's good at those things.
Yes,
very good. At that.
And but again, the acting, I'm just like, oh man.
Yeah,
you know, he's not even that bad. Ben Affleck is not a bad actor. No, it's just that he's Ben Affleck.
Yeah, like,
and
he's
not a standout actor. He's does all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's I loved Argo, and the one thing I would have changed is the casting of the main character.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. He's wearing army gear. I don't know what the fuck that's about.
It's a great idea that will in no way in hell be a good movie.
And also, they're showing that that was a big 3-minute trailer, and that movie comes out not soon.
Right.
That is not till next spring.
Well, they know that they're in recovery mode. They've got to win people back.
I know they got to win people back, but like, I feel like their timing was off. Like, this should have been when they showed that first teaser that we really didn't like. but it's like, how can you keep that excitement up until next spring?
Yeah.
Without giving away the entire movie.
And again, it's just the Batman saturation, broken record. I'm just like, well, Batman versus Superman, new Ben Affleck Batman, Suicide Squad, Batman's going to be in there.
Then I saw something about casting for Suicide Squad 2. I'm like, what? That movie doesn't come out till next year. Shut up.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
It was something in my Facebook feed. It was probably just BS, but I'm just like, casting such and such as such and such as Suicide Squad 2. I'm like, why? What? What? That movie's a year away. Who cares? Right. Like, fuck you. Calm down.
I know.
At least like Marvel stuff is kind of feels more tangibly on the horizon.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Ant-Man's a week off.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a Deadpool trailer that everybody fucking loved.
I didn't watch it.
Yep. And I don't want to watch a leak, so.
Yeah. And there's the this is a weird thing for me. There's the Ash versus the Evil Dead trailer, which is the upcoming Stars series.
I didn't love that trailer.
It's just the whole thing just weirds me out so much. I kind of get there was some things about the trailer that I really liked. It's just like the whole like old man Ash thing is kind of strange.
It's just I feel like the jokes aren't there, and like I think one of the things that threw me the most was the musical choice for that trailer, which, you know, isn't fair. That could just be a bad trailer versus show. But it gave it this kind of like cheap MTV show kind of feel that I didn't want. But I love the creature design, and I like how, you know, weird it is. And, you know, there's all those Sam Raimi point of view shots. And those are great.
Yeah, there was like a lot of neat stuff about it. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to be great.
I don't think it's going to be the show that people think it's going to be.
Yeah, I think
that's the problem.
I think because it has to fill time on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
And it's not all going to be like kooky, crazy effects. And and whatnot. Like, there's going to be, think about your superhero shows and how much downtime there is on there. It's not just, you know, your fucking Arrow melodrama and whatever. Yeah. Like, it's not constant. Like, I don't know how well that show is going to carry that for an episodic basis, but...
I'll say my favorite part of that trailer was when he started to tell his life story to that kid out of nowhere when the kid obviously didn't want to hear it. Like, that was the... Pablo, let me tell you everything right now.
Yeah.
Like, that was the most Ash moment to me. That and the hidden stuff around the trailer was cool. But, trailer-wise, there was
Marvel was not at Comic-Con, right? That is correct. Yeah, because there's been no Marvel news. They weren't there.
Yeah, it was all the Fox stuff. There was a lot of Fox. There was a Stan Lee was there with the four movies worth of Fox actors on stage, which is apparently a thing. They did show some stuff from Apocalypse. I don't think much.
Yeah,
I think that was kind of next year. It's got to be, I think. Yeah. Which is kind of crazy. There's a weird movie called The Hive, which is just kind of this cool little horror movie James Gunn was talking up and Nerdist is producing.
I used to be able to very easily keep track of what movie was coming next in the respective comic book series, and now it's like, oh, Ant-Man is in a couple weeks. I mean, I knew Ant-Man was next, but it's going to be more of that thing where they just kind of they show up, and I'm like, oh, okay, right. Yeah, that's what's... Now, is there another Marvel later this year? No.
I don't think so. No.
Not till next year.
Yeah.
Civil War. Not till Civil War. And then there's like three next year, right?
Yeah, because it's the TV series that get the attention between now and then.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah,
there was a lot of Peggy Carter news that I tried to not read because I really like Peggy Carter.
Shit, I gotta fucking read that. Watch that show. I forgot all about it. Yeah. I got it all on my computer. Oh, I really like Peggy Carter. Yeah, it's like Civil War, then Doctor Strange, then Thor 3 next year.
That sounds right.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't write anything else down, and nothing else is springing to mind. I feel like there was a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was tons of.
There were a lot of Star Wars stuff, and
there's a lot of Star Wars stuff. They showed the actual logo for Gambit, so people are like, okay,
fucking Christ,
the actual Gambit movie.
So many superhero movies. Is there any comic book news?
Not really. I forget. Someone won an Eisner that I had never heard of, so I didn't really research it. So I didn't know what the fuck it was.
All right. Well,
yeah, I guess we might just call it instead of look on our phones for news.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a reliable website I can go to and just be like, here's all the news from Comic-Con. It's called Facebook, and it shows up over the course of the weekend, really.
Twitter.
More or less.
But
yeah that's it.
Sad that Hannibal's probably Hannibal might get a movie. Like, that's where they're trying now. What's really interesting is that, like, because this half season is just about wrapping up, and the next half season is going to be Red Dragon. Like, it's a time jump. It's going right into the book. Like, and that's really interesting because the whole show has kind of been this weird jumble. So I'm excited for that. Yeah, I've been keeping up.
Then the movie will actually just be a remake of Silence of the Lambs.
Well, that's kind of the thing. It very well might be, in a way.
I was really surprised that Netflix didn't pick it up, but
Netflix, Hulu, Amazon.
Well, one of the problems is that what's his face has that other series that he's doing for channel. So Brian Fuller is probably like that. That is probably getting in the way that, like, they can't just strike when the iron is hot and get it like in there. He has this other project in the way.
American Gods. Will be a big thing.
Yep.
So I'm happy he's got like at least a big thing on the horizon, because every other show he's had canceled, and there's been plenty. It's always just been like, well, fuck, when is another Brian Fuller thing?
Well, that's what he does.
Yep.
Start strong, gets canceled.
Yep.
All right. That's gonna do it for this week's Triple Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch
you guys.
We'll catch you guys later.
Later.
Oh, I guess I should say, in a couple weeks, it sounds like we have another fun bunch of people in town deal coming up. Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. Some Games of Future Past coming next week, probably. And then that aforementioned thing in a couple weeks.
People.
Payball.
Yeah.
And probably a Casual Comics after that.
then you'll probably hear from us again. Hooray!
Hooray!
All right, bye. All right, bye.